Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening today.
Welcome to The Gays Are Revolting, a dissection of social and cultural issues relevant to gay men.
We put the G in LGBTQIA+, and we're here to help you be the best G you can fracken be. I'll never stop saying it. He fracks, goddammit. I'll never stop.
Follow us on Instagram or Twitter, or join our community on Facebook by searching The Gays Are Revolting.
And support the show and access our after shows and live streams at patreon.com/gaysrevoltingpod.
Hey, that's the script.
Oh my god, we're in the same room.
We are.
We're so back in the same room. This is so exciting.
So weird.
I can touch you all. You're right.
You're not
here.
Don't.
COVID-19. Get away, Mikey.
For anyone outside of Victoria, this is sort of the first time that we have been able to legally be in the same room. Absolutely. And catch up and be back in the studio, and it's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Our bumblebee.
So we've had several wines.
Yes. All our hairs are longer. Mm. Yes. We're all bigger.
Okay.
But our producer's been very good. Everything's been sanitized for us.
Especially Luke. We had to boil Luke for a while.
I've been sprayed down before they let me in the building.
Yeah.
They said, you better step back. We're going to
Glen 20 your body.
Yeah. I have to be saying, though, this isn't the first time I've been in the room with one of the co-hosts, because I had Mikey over to record an episode of my Hungry Jack special.
A couple of nights ago.
By far the worst guest I've ever had the displeasure of hosting. He drank alcohol on the camera. He never looked in the camera. He never looked at directly at the camera.
It was a very interestingly delusional night.
I have to say, it's actually not the first time I've been in the same room as anyone from the podcast either, because I had Mikey and Kyle and Dan, our producer, and I think some of your family, actually, Luke, and actually everyone I know except for you, Luke, came over for dinner the other night, which was nice.
But it's exciting to be back. We're safe. We're being responsible and sanitized. But we are glad that, I think, when we made it work while we were doing online episodes,
We did our best. But I think it's exciting to be back together, and it is
very good.
Gives it a bit
for
of
morale.
That's it.
Yeah.
Now we've got some pretty important stuff to talk about this week. Do stay tuned for that. There's some pretty intense stuff coming up, but I think some pretty important things to be discussing. Of course, we will be joined this week by Indigenous journalist Alan Clark to discuss how the Black Lives Matter movement is rising in Australia.
Big fan.
And very important chat. But before we get into that, I would like to talk about something that I've only just become aware of, probably because I live in Victoria, but New South Wales are very rarely ahead of us.
Ahead of the time at the moment.
But they have really shown their stuff. They've launched a new program, which is really exciting. And it's a new at-home HIV test. Have you guys heard about this?
Yes.
I was reading about this
today.
Basically, it's a new initiative. It's for men, both cis and trans identifying men, who have sex with other men.
Make love.
Thank you. It doesn't have to be love.
It's always love.
I have had a lot of sex that has not been making love, I can tell you that. The great thing is they don't have to have a Medicare card. That's a really big thing, or at least they don't have to present their Medicare card. It does mean that people that aren't perhaps Australian citizens, or
does that also mean it doesn't go on your My Health
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Because people don't want everything being on their
record. But also a lot of people, I mean, I've got a friend who's, I think, 25 and still has the family Medicare card, you know, with the parents' names and your name down the bottom. Mm-hmm. You know, we've just talked about before, one of the biggest problems with HIV testing, and the most important thing, I think, as a gay man to end the transmission of HIV is to get tested regularly.
Yeah.
But we know that for a lot of people in the community, it can be something that's very scary, very confrontational.
Daunting,
We've all talked about our first HIV tests, how scary that can be. I think the great thing about people being able to do it at home is it takes a lot of those elements out that might be quite confronting for people.
And like you don't have to talk to someone about it. You can just...
No, I think you do talk to someone.
You go on like a video, don't you?
Yeah.
It's not like a face-to-face like in-person.
Exactly,
yeah. So it's a better than kind of having to go into a clinic for a lot of people.
And I think it's actually important that people are having conversations.
Yeah. I think it is that human connection while you're going through that mentally. Yeah. I think it's definitely very important.
Well, there's a duty of care whenever you're receiving medical service.
Yeah, they can't just ship you out like a kit and be like, good luck.
But the great thing about the contact that you have with this program is it's all peer-to-peer. So it's other male-identifying people that have sex with other men that are on the other end. And it's also remote. So it can be video chats or phone calls or something like that. I'm more of a face-to-face kind of person, but I'm not from that generation. Mm-hmm. So for a younger generation, I think this virtual catch-up thing is actually a really great new initiative for them to be seeing medical professionals and getting this information that they need.
Telehealth is a huge... So as someone who manages a psychology
especially
practice
at the moment
that recently had to migrate all of our services to telehealth, there definitely is a gap between people who can just like adapt to it, and it's amazing. And we're finding this really incredible thing where it's actually beneficial to a certain demographic of people, specifically our age group, who potentially have like 50 different things on the go, and we're comfortable in front of a camera, that it actually makes accessing healthcare much more convenient and easier for us, and therefore we're more likely to do so. Because sometimes, you know, we do talk about often people not engaging in healthcare because of stigmas or fear, but there's also the worried well part of like our demographic who don't, because we just simply don't have the capability to carve out the time. And so I something I've found is we've had engagement rates, at least in our mental health, increase because people can just like hop online, do an online consultation. Telehealth is like, honestly, for people in Australia, mental health funding for telehealth is due to end in September, and I think that's a huge mistake.
I think we'll see a lot of conversations around that,
and not only for like people in our demographic, but for people who live rurally who don't have
already have it. That's live in a rural area, you already get
have access to
subsidies for telehealth because of that. But it should be across the board.
This initiative, though, imagine, I mean, no one at the moment, until now, has been able to do remote HIV. Well, that's not true, sorry. You could pay to have HIV tests bought from overseas, but they weren't approved by the Australian. They weren't approved by the Australian Medical Board and that sort of stuff. So this is the first time for free that people can get at-home testing for HIV. So, okay, New South Wales isn't the biggest state in the country, but imagine when they can roll this out in the Northern Territory and Queensland and Western Australia and that sort of stuff. This is going to be a game changer for people wanting to access this kind of health, because, you know, as we've talked about before, people living in rural areas, you don't just go down to the GP and say, I want a HIV test, because then everyone in the town... Well, the fear is that everyone in the town might know that that's something you've gone and asked.
Whispers.
It's like and often it's, you know, that GP is a family GP that your whole family go to. It's just I get it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's also great for people who are like male identifying that do have sex with men, but do not have like sort of the family support around them, or have the family or friends that know that they do.
Or around their family and friends.
Exactly.
We also
right.
have to acknowledge whether it's
they
moral
can be
or
discreet
not.
About it.
Yeah, whether it's moral or not, and whether you you personally accept it. There are a lot of men who are married and possibly still in a sexual relationship with their wife who are having sex with men as well.
Absolutely.
Who aren't getting tested because of the issues that might arise. Now, moral stuff aside, it's still essential that these people are getting HIV tests. In fact, it's essential that anyone that's having extramarital sex should still be getting HIV tests, but especially men having sex with other men.
Tested
so the other great thing about this program is that once you've had this online consultation... You're then sent a little kit, and it's sent in plain packaging for discretion.
They
discreet it. Yeah, a very small package. Mm. It's not like a big thing that says, here's your HIV test. Yeah. And
plays
then you
a little
do
song when you open it.
Like a butterfly flies out.
One of those things that shoots confetti out, of, the, out of the card.
Could you be imagining that? Wow. Oh my God. Sometimes you order porn and like I just want to get a little bit of levity before we dive right into that. But sometimes you'd be ordering porn and it comes in that like
ordering porn online or via the mail system.
You call up the number. It's a mail order, like home shopping.
Who calls up a number for porn,
Because
Luke?
Sometimes you're 13 years old.
Luke, oh, okay.
We're talking historically, yeah.
Sometimes you're a little boy that wants to get his rocks off.
Oh, Jesus, you're daring.
Why didn't you do what everyone else did and just jerk off to the underwear labels?
Yeah. Oh my God.
I did that too, but they got, you know, my parents kept finding them and I had to keep blaming it on my sister. Maybe that's why she doesn't like me anymore.
Oh my God. I mean, I can think of other reasons, but
the technology in those things is actually really amazing. Yeah. You prick your little finger, you put it in the machine, it beeps at you and everything. But
My best friend at high school, Matt Bendel, was diabetic.
Matt Bendel.
It's such a cool name. It's one of those names you have to say.
Matt_Bendel. Yeah.
It's really shout out to Matt Bendel.
Lovely guy. Oh, I think he does listen.
Oh, hi, Matt.
He was diabetic, but we were like, we felt pretty cool because everyone wanted to come and have their finger pricked by Matt.
Yeah.
And so sometimes some people would like get their fingerprint. They I think it would give them 50 cents. They'd give them 50 cents or something. And they'd like get their fingerprint and then their sausage roll and their packet of chips and then they get their fingerprint pricked again to see if it'll change.
And he's just earning his lunch money.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, he's making the dollars.
Like,
yeah.
Give me that.
I did a diabetes test with my daddy.
Turns out.
I was like, turns out I'm 100% that bitch. The other interesting thing that's been happening before we dive into deep dive into deep dive territory is something we talked a lot about on this show is being on Grindr.
Grindy.
And they've recently removed a feature which is quite contentious in our community because it pisses off quite a few people, and I'm interested to see where this goes. Can you whisper on a podcast? So I don't know if you've
leaving voice messages? Isn't that a new thing on Grindr?
Oh my God, voice messages?
They should remove that because that sounds terrifying and I hope to never be single
again.
Can
I tell you a story once? Sorry, before I get to what they actually changed. I told someone on Grindr once that I was from Adelaide and they were like, well, do you say dance, prance?
They made you say it on a voice thing.
They made me say it on a voice thing that I had to send them a voice thing so I didn't pronounce it dance, prance, or whatever. And then they said, it's okay, I'll suck you now. Something that's always felt really icky to me and I've personally had quite a weird relationship because I'm a frequent flyer on their apps is that in the past you could actually filter people by their ethnicity. And it actually... Grindr. And you can... I'm pretty certain you can do it on Scruff too, but even the fact... Hinge is a new app, but even when you're setting up a profile, the fact that it prompts you in those like, let me get some of this information from you. And it's like, well, how tall are you? And how old are you?
What's your weight? And
what is your skin color?
And what color do you be? Yeah. Like, what color are you being? You kind of go like, oh, I see where we're going with this. And it turns you off. You get... In a lot of ways, it's a microaggression on a like...
For sure.
I don't think it's micro. Scale. There's nothing micro about it.
Macro.
Well... You know, because it's framed in another way. Grindr had a sort of statement that, hey, we put this in here so other minorities could find, you know,
I've read that before.
Yeah, okay, they say that, but they never even had Indigenous Australian on there. They had to be other.
Yeah.
I've been other for a while on the app. Yeah, oh, I think they do have mixed, but even that, I don't really feel comfortable putting down on it because I don't feel like my colour necessarily has... I don't like putting any of my details down on the apps but
you're just a blank profile.
You're one of those. It's just a grey face, and I send you photos of Kyle.
And you just send hi 20 times.
Yeah. Hey, how's it going? No, but this is serious. Yeah. I'm so fucking glad it is in recognition of the Black Lives Matter movement that they've finally, because people have been asking for this for a while. Mikey has something.
You know what thing blows my mind though? Like the fact that they did a kinda campaign last year about ethnicity and
but
being
still
kinder
didn't.
To other people but did not remove it, and it's only taken for it now when Black Lives Matter happens for them to remove it. Mm. Like,
yeah. That's
great
the
that they have
works,
and I absolutely
babe.
Appreciate them for doing it, but it's just like, you had a chance a year ago when you were dealing with race issues. Mm.
You had
Why
the chance
only
4 years ago when you introduced that filter and social media was ablaze.
Sorry, I'm just getting...
Get angry, Dally.
So annoyed.
They've been told constantly by the community that we think that this is not okay, this is not correct, and they've kept it there.
Absolutely.
Here's the thing to be excited about, though, I think. If they're doing it, it means it's because the majority has swung. So when there was reaction to it before, they were going, we're losing some people who don't like the idea that this filter's here, but we're making more money off the people that are... Now, I know this is a fucked up way of looking at it, but when corporations swing in your favor, it means you're winning.
It means
it's a fucked up symptom that there is change happening.
Yeah.
So they're only doing it because it's financially beneficial to them.
Yes.
So that means that, when it was first launched, they looked at the people complaining and they went... Now we'll still make more money the other way. When the kind of thing happened and people were saying, oh, it's still fucked up, you've got the race filter on there. Yeah. They were like, yeah, but we still make more money with it. So if they're actually changing it now that this movement is, people are really standing up and listening to it, then they've realized, hang on a second, this is the thing more people care about, which is a really great symptom.
It'll tie into what we talk about later on in the show, but unless the systematic and the approach changes to race in general, removing the filters actually just kind of means jack shit to me, because you're not changing people's minds or attitudes. What needs to happen is Grindr needs to say, we've removed this filter. We also now classify you putting in your bio, no Asians, no rice, whatever. We consider that hate speech.
Absolutely.
And you'll be blocked.
Without a fucking
doubt.
That should be a reportable thing. Yeah. Is it not?
It's not.
No.
You can't report people for that.
Because
that's fucked.
Because
they
base
it
as a preference.
People say that to you on the fucking street, mate. People say that.
They base it as a preference. Like, no, it is straight out racism. That's what it is.
But you can remove filters and options all you like, but as long as that mentality exists, people like me will still feel the same way and get treated the way that we're treated. So I think it's cool that it's gone, because it's made it a little bit more difficult for people
to
filter me out.
Absolutely. They all got to see you now.
So welcome to
all
the next
of them.
Year of your life. Yeah.
Oh boy.
God, yeah.
But as long as people still be gross, it'll be gross. That's my two cents, honestly. Mm-hmm. Is like, people are still going to put that shit in their profiles, regardless of whether the filters exist.
That's true, but I am glad that it's. I'm glad that it's harder for them to do that.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Now, it's sort of hard to know where to start with this, but firstly, I just want to sort of give my condolences to, like, the Floyd family, of course, and anybody affected by police brutality in America and around the world.
Around the world, yeah.
Who is of color, of any color at all. And, like, I sort of want to pay respects to the Indigenous people of Australia as well. It's a really hard time to watch what's happening in the media at the moment. It's very, very in your face. It is a lot to take in. But I think it's something very important for all of us to talk about, how horrible everything is, and the fact that it's taken for another person to die on film again, and to actually be heard, I guess, finally this time. Watching the media and watching how that they're portraying these riots happen as if it just came out of fucking nowhere.
Mm, yeah.
To watch white reporters say, oh, but they should be protesting peacefully, they should be doing this and they should be doing that.
They were
absolutely
well. They started off doing
bullshit
that, and that wasn't working.
Because
and
we have been for so long, and the only reason why these things turn into riots is because of police brutality. Because the police push back, they do not let us just peacefully protest whatsoever, and especially in America as well. It is in their Second Amendment right to be able to peacefully protest, which is exactly what they've been doing. We should not have to go out and protest constantly for the exact same rights that white people have. It is really, really emotionally taxing to watch people that I care about have to go through this shit again.
Mm.
Like, because that's the thing. It's not the first time that we've had to do this. It's ridiculous.
Everyone's absolutely at a breaking point. Especially it's there, so all their leaders are failing them in such a way.
There are years of frustration. Yeah. This is the thing. And like, I just want to really clarify that we are not a journalistic podcast.
We've got all our opinions.
There is a lot of frustration behind this. And I tell you what, Mikey and I in particular are feeling this, because when it comes to topics of race, even though we're fully aware, and something I really want to highlight a million times over, Black Lives Matter is a movement about black lives. Yes,
absolutely.
Not about little Filipino lives.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Not about Maori lives.
Yeah.
We understand some aspects of it, but not all of it. But it's a feeling we recognize. It's not one that we've personally experienced. It's really important, especially to our allies and to people posting, that you can't have this fear of being like, well, person of POC is like the correct term to be using when I'm talking about this, because POC includes me, and and this is about Black lives in particular, this particular protest. But on a greater systematic scale, we feel a lot of frustration, anger, fatigue. Fatigue is a huge one, because we've been talking and fighting and pushing against these sort of systematic problems for years. For years. And we get told, no, it's not that big of a deal. Or we get laughed at. Or we find a way to do it through comedy on things like this show. And there's a level of frustration and fatigue when suddenly the world is like tuned in to a specific thread, and it's an awful, tragic, borderline civil war. That you go,
it's about to
it
be.
Is a civil
yeah,
war.
It's,
yeah.
It is a civil war.
It's gonna blow up. The president has sent in troops to fight his own people. It is a civil war.
It's fucked.
The level of frustration you could only imagine to be seeing, you know, what was it, 3.9 million people post a black square. Do you know how, like, how ultimately frustrating that is for people? That, like, this is my own personal experience of the past 2 weeks. To be seeing my timeline filled with black squares and going, you'll never spoke up shit. You'll never spoke up fucking shit before this. Do you know how fucking frustrating that is? And I want to see receipts. I want to see receipts. Financially.
That's it.
If you post a black square, where did you put your money outside of doing that? Where?
That's it.
What petitions have you signed? What content have you shared? Like, I'm sorry to get angry, but...
Like, it's great that you've posted the black square, but I need you to follow up. Like, I need you to follow through with that action.
The call to action.
Exactly
it's
right.
It's not just about Googling an image of Black Lives Matter and posting that on your social media wall. It's actually about actually providing real information that people can use and actually doing things to help their cause.
Here's my call to action. You posted a black square. If you have a job and if you have the fiscal ability to go out for drinks or buy a coffee, you can afford $20 to a bail fund,
to a legal fund.
To a legal fund. Even here within Australia, there's the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Services that you can donate to. If you don't have that money, I understand that. I don't have that money all the time either. I was able to, like, I was privileged to be able to this time. If you don't, the bail funds have set up numerous YouTube videos that you can stream in the background that actually generates revenue
through the ads. There's different ways that you can do it.
Especially like on the home front here in Australia, like our Indigenous people, they're the ones being left behind. They just don't have the numbers to have the same sort of protests that they do have in the US. There are still protests going on and there are Indigenous people protesting, but because it isn't on such a large scale, you don't see it. And because the media is white as well, you don't see it. The 435 people that have died in police custody since 1991 have not seen justice. Not a single police officer has been charged. even after the Royal Commission in the early 90s. Like, I just don't fucking get it. Like, please, please, please share Indigenous news. We all live in a fucking white bubble. I live in a very privileged bubble. We all fucking do. Like, majority of the people that listen to this show do. Let's be real. Get into it, please.
It's so beautiful to hear you speak so passionately about this, and it has been so beautiful to see voices that have never been heard in the last few days being aired finally. And there's so many more that need to be heard, and that's why it's so exciting. As a white person who can never understand what it's like for you guys and what it's like for the black people that are protesting here and in the States and around the world, I'm so happy that there's we're starting to finally chip away at a giant boulder, and there's so much more of that boulder to go, but we are seeing little chips being made into it, and people are starting to stand up and listen to it. The only thing that I really have to say is for fellow white people like myself, I know that it is really sometimes confronting to sort of be sitting there going, oh, and you go, well, hang on, I do the best I can, and you probably are, and that's great. Mm. It's not a personal attack on you. Don't get personally offended and then go off the other way. Listen, just continue listening. And the other important thing, a friend shared this on social media yesterday, a person of color directed towards white people, and I thought it was really interesting. They were saying, you know, white people, I know that it might be confronting for you to confront family members or colleagues when they say things like, well, all lives matter or white lives matter as well. It might be a little bit confronting for you to stand up to them. But at the end of the day, the worst thing that's going to happen to you is you might be embarrassed, or you might have a bit of an argument, or you might stop talking to somebody.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, for what black people that are protesting are facing is death.
Yeah.
So for us, there is very little risk for standing up and actually having an active voice. And it shouldn't actually be the responsibility of black people to convince white people that black lives matter. It's actually our responsibility. It's the responsibility of the people, the white people that have recognized this, to go and sort their mob out, and they shouldn't be expecting black people to go in and convince our white family members to sort it out. We need to go and approach those people. Go and do some reading about how you can actually approach and spread the message and give tools to other people in the community, in your own community, about how to support this incredible movement that is way overdue of happening.
Yeah, because it's a privilege to educate yourself about racism instead of experiencing it.
Yes.
I think a lot of white people do get very weird and awkward about it. Like, I've definitely been afraid of saying the wrong thing, but it's your responsibility to educate yourself. The information is out there. Go educate yourself, watch videos, read books, talk to people, have conversations with other more educated white people on the topic.
It's okay if you say if your intention is to do the right thing.
Just say it, and actually, if your intention is there and right, just say the things, because you're actually having the conversation then. And
if you get it wrong,
if you get it wrong, someone can correct you and actually have the conversation, because then people are talking about it.
And don't take offense when someone does correct you whatsoever. And like, one suggestion that I've given to a few of my white friends is that
you got
to
be open.
If you're scared about talking about this, make friends with people of different races.
Definitely.
Involve yourself in those cultures. One of the big things that I've been seeing recently is white gay men turning around and being like, I need you all to like stand up for gay rights. And it's just like, hang on a fucking second.
This is like the whole all lives thing matters. Yes. Like, it's such bullshit. And like, I saw a great example of someone comparing to someone explaining that their house is on fire, and then they're calling for help. Yeah. And people are like, we need to help that person. Their house is on fire. And then someone else next door with a perfectly fine house saying, my house needs help too. And they're like, well, your house isn't on fire, so you're fine. They're like, all houses matter. Yeah. So I'm like, it's such a stupid concept. Yeah. So for people to be pushing that,
because no one's turning around and saying that all lives don't matter.
Lives matter, but you don't need help.
We do not need to say that. Like, the point is, black lives fucking matter. Like, that's the highlight of this. Definitely, because black people are being oppressed. Yes. Like,
and because people aren't aware that the black issue. Lives matter. Yeah,
exactly right.
Another interesting thing is there are so many people in our community, in our white community, not only queer, but the broader community as well, that have benefited from riots and from protests and from fighting police directly. And I'm not just talking about, you know, the ones that we've seen a lot on social media, like Stonewall, but, you know, the first Mardi Gras, that was queers versus police.
Absolutely. Yeah.
One of the oldest stories in white Australian history, one of the first things you learn about in school in history in Australia is the Eureka Rebellion, mm-hmm. with the miners fighting the police, is literally the same thing. There was an oppressed group of people mm-hmm. that were being killed easily by police, and they started a rebellion, a vicious fight against the police. Now, that's hailed now as a heroic movement. And I find it really ironic that there are a lot of people that benefited from that in white mm-hmm. Australia mm-hmm. that now have an issue with black people rising up and saying, hang on, this is really fucked up and we need to be heard.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I watched a documentary earlier in the week. It's actually on Netflix, and I would urge all our listeners to watch it. It's called LA 92 mm-hmm. on Netflix, and it just highlights all the riots and everything that happened in 92 to do with Rodney King, who was victim to police brutality, and it was actually caught on film, like unaware to them, and it was this whole lead up to this whole situation of how these five cops were beating the shit out of this guy, and they didn't know they got caught on camera.
Yeah.
And then they had literal video footage of all these people doing this awful, fucked up thing, and then they all got let off, and like it sparked the riots, and it's some fucked up, powerful, heavy shit to watch, but mm-hmm. I think it's definitely needed to kind of see that history of racism in America.
Yeah,
I would highly, highly recommend it. It's called LA 92.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the thing that we're seeing that is happening in mm-hmm. America right now, and the point that, you know, we are most likely releasing this episode the day that we will be having a protest.
Yeah, so Saturday
in Melbourne.
Yeah, so today we're recording on Thursday evening.
But we'll be releasing
June,
this on
but it
Saturday.
Is released on the Saturday, yeah. So we are having a peaceful protest in Melbourne at Parliament Steps.
And the message we're getting is, you know, let's keep this as peaceful as mm-hmm, possible, mm-hmm. and I'm sure it will be.
Yeah.
But the main criticism that I'm seeing from white gay men online, well, American white gay men, oh no, even Australian white gay men, there's one real foul fucker in Sydney.
There's been a couple
that I will post about, but real fucking disgust. Like, I have no hesitation to say this is a filth of the fucking earth person. Has been about the looting and the rioting and the violence. But the fact of the matter is, at a certain point, peaceful process does not work.
It's not enough
anymore. It is not enough. Mm-hmm. In the context, in your mind, as a white person, you see someone looting and you're like, that person's out of control.
Yeah.
Because you don't have the context of what it's like to be discriminated against for years and years and years and years and years and how that feels.
Absolutely.
And you look at the anger and the and the rage of it all. And it's something really understandable, I think, when you go, we've been through. The reason why there's so much rage is there's a lot of calls to have some sort of reform within the police force, at least in America. Mm. And the truth of the matter is that they've already undergone reform.
Mm. Absolutely.
It was like 2015?
Yeah. It wasn't that long ago.
Where they had... They spent millions of dollars. Mm. The police force, the very same police force, Minneapolis, they were put through sensitivity training, bias training, mindfulness, how to de-escalate situations. They have already been through what you've been saying now we need to do. And we have ended up in the exact same spot.
Yeah.
And the way anyone would look at that is, you know, realistically, logically, you would say, okay, we tried that. It's cost millions of dollars. It's not going to work.
It's not done nothing. Yeah.
And that's why they're saying defund.
Yeah.
Defund the police. Mm. There's a really useful chart that shows when you put money into this thing and this thing, this is the social effect, roll-on effect that it has. You put money into, it's something like $14 billion, the Los Angeles Police Department is funded by the state. When you put money into it, what it actually does is it militarizes. It actually funnels and it builds. And what needs to happen is this makes sense to me in my mind, and this is my opinion, but when you defund something, changes start happening on a societal level. When you take the money out of the police force, you say, instead of me chucking $4 million to these people to beat down black people, I'm going to put that 4 million into education and opportunities and into lower socioeconomic neighborhoods to lift them up. You start seeing change on an actual societal level.
Yeah.
As opposed to reform. Mm-hmm. Reform just puts the money straight back into the same toxic belly.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah. You know, this is sort of what I was saying about Grindr before. If you take the money away, they start looking at why the money is missing and they start redirecting, focusing on it. One thing I think would be a great result would be making position, making a quote, like making sure there is black people in the system. There was a really interesting study. It was actually a couple of years old, but it was brought out again in the last few days about American police. And if a white dude is put into a position of power, then he's probably going to hire something like seven mates or people that he's had connection with in the next couple of years. If a black man is put into a position of power in the police force, in a police force in the States, it's going to be 4 years before he promotes another black person because he doesn't want to be seen as influencing the system. What I think would be great would be a law being made to say that there must be in every level a much larger proportion of black people, not only in America but also here in Australia, so that we can actually have those conversations at every level of the police force. And it's not just bullshit. I mean, I've been to those trainings in my own workplace where they come in and they go, look, we're doing a compliance training thing. And everyone's listening and going, yeah, I know it. I get it. I believe in it. It's not real. It's not physical, actual learning.
Yeah.
It's people ticking boxes and going, yep, done that course now. If we actually had people that were personally affected by it, and this is something that happened in Victoria in the police force after the Tasty raids, and Christine Nixon was brought in, and she created a lot of reform about the way that the Victoria police treated queer people. If we could see something like that happen on a much larger scale with people of colour in every police force, I think that might actually have some tangible change.
I mean, I read a crazy fact today that in California there are more required hours of training to become a barber than to become a police officer.
Really?
There's it's 1,500 hours minimum training to become a barber, whereas 664 hours minimum training to become a police officer. I mean, if that doesn't say volumes to you.
Yeah. One of the actresses of Pose, Angela Ross, Angelica Ross, she put out a video on Instagram saying that you can reform as much as you want in the American police system, but the American police system is just that. It is a system set up systemically for racism. It needs to be completely shut down and a new system needs to be put in place. No matter how many black people you put in there, no matter how many gay people, queer people you put in there, nothing's going to change.
If the house is rotten,
it's
always going to be rotten, no matter how many.
If you've got a termite infestation, you need to tear it down and build it again. You cannot just rebuild from where it is because it's going to come down again. Like, it needs, like, especially in America, even here in Australia, it needs to be torn down and rebuilt.
I think we're going to have a conversation about this in the future. Hopefully, in the near future, when Donald Trump is no longer president. And I hope that is in the next, after the next election. But we also have to look at the fact, and I'm not saying, I'm so glad that these protests are happening. I'm so glad this conversation is happening. But Donald Trump is the president of the epicenter of the biggest pandemic since the Spanish flu. And I feel like he is prodding this. And whilst I'm glad it's happening, he's winning on two fronts. He's winning because he's always wanted to be a wartime president.
We were talking about this earlier.
We talked about this off air,
Every
single day, he was being attacked by right and left wing for fucking up his reaction to the coronavirus.
Absolutely.
And so now, effectively, what he's done, whilst the people that were never going to vote for him are protesting against him, he's galvanizing the people that he'd lost a little bit. So he'd lost some of his followers because of his reaction to coronavirus, because they started seeing their family members die. So I'm glad it's happening, don't get me wrong, but I'm just like, I hate him so much, and I'm just furious that he's sitting in his fucking little bunker.
Because that's the thing, like, there's two approaches that he could have taken. And this is what Kevin Rudd was saying this morning. When he was on Channel 7 News, and he was just like, there's two approaches that a president can take. You can either be empathetic and you can listen to the people and you can diffuse tensions. Or you can do what he did and incite violence and put the military into play.
Literally.
Like, you are making a situation worse than what it needs to be. Like, I mean, it is ridiculous. But I also want to say as well, where the fuck are the Democrats in this situation? Mm. Because you know what? If Bernie Sanders was the leader of the Democratic Party, he would for sure be in lead with this. But Joe Biden is just like tiptoeing around it, hoping that he wins. And it's just like, no, you need to be standing the fuck up and making real change and real fucking speeches about this, speaking out about him, because that's how you're going to win. You are the Bill Shorten of the American politics, and it pisses me off because you have an opportunity for change and you're not taking it.
Yeah.
If you actually did step up and made a fucking change, it would make you one of the best presidents in the fucking new world. Yeah. Well, not in fucking the history of American politics.
It is a new world. That's for sure.
Like, it would just set you aside from so many other white presidents, and you are just not taking it. Like,
so many white presidents.
All the white presidents.
All these white presidents in my pocket. Oh my God.
It is really disgusting to see how the police force is responding in so many videos uploaded online now. But in response to a specific event to do with police, you would think that they would have some sort of empathy or anything. Like, so
they're
fucked
not
up
responsible.
And
that's the thing. And that's why that's why defunding and huge reform needs to happen, because individual police officers need to be held responsible for their individual actions as opposed to the state.
Yeah.
That's the problem here. And that's a problem here.
It is a problem here as well.
Here
where we live.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders are advised that the following discussion may contain names of people who have died.
The high-profile death of George Floyd and the mass protests that followed has deepened opposition to racist violence by the police in the United States. But deaths of Indigenous Australians within police custody are also happening at excessive rates. Joining us tonight is Alan Clark, an investigative journalist, writer, and Murawari man currently based in France. Alan, since a royal commission into this very issue in 1991, about 432 Indigenous people have died in custody. How are members of the police force getting away with this sort of behaviour?
Look, I think there are several reasons as to why not one person has ever been convicted of an Aboriginal death in custody since 1991.
Yeah,
I think part of it is that in Australia we don't like truth telling. Essentially, we don't like to talk about the ways in which Australia was founded, which was based off spilt black blood. So essentially, the judicial system and the instruments of that judicial system, including the police and our corrections, were set up without Aboriginal people in mind. So for many, many years, and we have to look at it contextually, for many, many years, many decades since colonization, that system has continued to function where it is very clear that Aboriginal lives are treated as less important than white lives. And that is just a reality. So that Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody was set up because there were so many deaths happening that were suspicious, often Aboriginal people going into custody for minor infractions and then ending up dead. So this Royal Commission was meant to get to the bottom of that. It did find that there was institutionalized racism within the police force across the country. It issued a number of recommendations, over 300 recommendations, but they weren't mandatory. They weren't mandatory. So yeah. Each state and territory, it was their decision whether or not they included some of those measures to reduce the numbers of deaths in custody. Unfortunately, only a handful of those recommendations are in place today in certain states and territories. I mean, that is part of the problem. There are things that the police aren't doing that could reduce these number of deaths. On the other hand, when an Aboriginal person dies in custody, and you know, it's often in a horrific way.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you get media coverage that has context. Often, you know, we're so used to seeing in the mainstream media in Australia that Aboriginal people are more likely to be perpetrators of crime rather than victims of it. Absolutely. So when we do become a victim, it's very hard to get public empathy. So without that public empathy and the media, you know, actually advocating for justice in these cases, often what happens is someone will die. You don't get that very public support you would do, say, for if it happened to a non-Indigenous person.
Absolutely.
And that public support is key in pushing authorities and our government to actually get some kind of resolution. So what happens is we slip through the cracks. There have been several police officers who've been charged over deaths in custody, but as I said, none of them have ever been convicted. Which is outrageous when you when you go back and you look at some of the cases like Morungi Dumaji in Palm Island or David Dungay in Sydney.
Yeah.
It is very clear that someone has failed in their duty of care.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And Alan, what do you think it actually says about the culture of policing and correctional facilities in Australia? And what kind of people do you think these institutions are actually attracting?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult one in that there are a lot of people working within the police force and within our corrections facilities who have great relationships with the Aboriginal community. I've met many former detectives and police officers who many of them have gotten PTSD based off working on Aboriginal cases because they couldn't get their authorities or their superiors to invest resources in trying to help Aboriginal victims.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been burnt out. On the other hand, we also have a lot of people being attracted to the police force, a lot of young people in particular, who come in with very little understanding of that very charged relationship between the Aboriginal community and the police force. They're coming into there and they're being confronted with all of this stuff, and often they don't have the tools or instruments to deal with that, and unfortunately it can end in a death in custody. It's as simple as that. Or police brutality. Police forces across the country today say they're different. They say, you know, there's been a changing of guard, that we've evolved, that there is now a more emphasis on sort of working with the community rather than sort of working within it punitively. Mm-hmm. But you can't get rid of over 200 years of racial attitudes within the police force. It's without actually making some kind of radical change. Unfortunately, the first thing that happens when an Aboriginal person dies in custody, we'll often see the police come out without the facts, without all the evidence, and immediately stand behind the police officer that, you know, has been accused of causing death in custody. That happened to in the Morungi Dumaji case in Palm Island. So he was taken into custody basically because he was singing that song, Who Let the Dogs Out, as the cop was nearby. He was taken into custody. A few hours later, he comes out dead with injuries that most people could only sustain in a plane crash. His liver is almost sliced in two. The officer says that they had a tussle and his injuries were just caused by falling over onto a step. immediately the Queensland Police Force at that time, or the Police Association, got together and, you know, in solidarity with the police officer, basically threatened to walk off the job or strike if this police officer was investigated or prosecuted. God, I mean, what kind of message that send? Awful. And yeah. There is very little education within their training. I mean, I think it's piecemeal. At one point in New South Wales, I know that in the academy, and it was optional whether or not they took a course on cultural issues around Aboriginal people. It goes back to the idea of truth telling, which was one of the main points in the Uluru Statement from the Heart last year, which the government was going to take into consideration in terms of how we move forward as a country and sort of unify the country between black and white. Mm-hmm. At the core of that was this idea of a truth-telling commission, which they've had in Canada, where you basically sit down and you air all of your dirty laundry in the public, and it is an official thing. Everybody has to listen to it. Everyone has to look at that racism front on and say, we messed up, we did the wrong thing, and, you know, okay, let's get better. But until that happens, I can't see police or the judicial system changing in that sense.
Now, we've seen sort of how mobilized people have become after watching the unfortunate death of George Floyd on camera. But we've had similar videos in Australia where correctional officers are abusing Indigenous people, and nothing at all has changed here. Like, watching that video of David Dungay was horrendous, and I cannot believe that nothing was done about that whatsoever. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, look, I mean, the David Dungay video is really a damning indictment on Australia. I mean, here is a 26-year-old man who refused to eat a biscuit, who is then basically pinned down by several police officers. He is saying in the video several times, I can't breathe.
Absolutely.
So he starts to cough up blood, and then he dies, essentially. The air is crushed out of him. It is exactly the same as George Floyd. The reason why the David Dungay video, I think, in Australia didn't really kind of resonate with most Australians is because we view Aboriginal people as criminals.
Yeah.
So that is the mindset. So when we have a tendency in our country to side with law enforcement because the people who are consuming mainstream media, largely non-Indigenous, don't have these issues with the police. They don't have to worry about the police every day. For them, the police are protecting them. And so when they see a video of David Dungay, who is in Long Bay Prison, being killed by officers, I think there is an immediate reaction that, you know, he was a criminal. He was in jail. So in a way, he deserved it. And that's not just me sort of imagining what people think. I know people think that way because I worked for BuzzFeed for a number of years and covered David's death and several others, including Miss Jew, who died in WA, who was locked up for unpaid fines and was and basically died in a police cell. And the CCTV footage of that is equally as shocking. Yet when I would publish these stories, you know, the comments that I was getting from people outside of Australia was, you know, they were like, this is unbelievable. I can't believe this is happening in Australia. Who would have thought? We thought Australia was this kind of, you know, kind of great country that was free and, you know, everyone was kind of all got along. And then the comments from Australian people overwhelmingly would bluntly say, well, you know, they shouldn't have been doing whatever they were doing in the first place. To the point where some people were very explicit about it and say, well, if you don't want to die, don't commit a crime. I mean, so basically, they, you know, it's that is the real Australia there. That is
absolutely
the one that we don't talk about. So when something happens overseas, like George Floyd or Eric Garner in New York who died, several other incidents, it's easier for us to look outward rather than inward, because we don't have a history of being able to actually confront, you know, our past, and you know,
be honest and upfront about it.
Absolutely, and that goes down to our education system. I mean, people not being taught about this stuff. I know if you look in America, they have a very large, proactive civil rights movement. I mean, they have Martin Luther King Day. They have all of this stuff. So by default, white Americans have to be aware of their history in that sense. It's there in their face. Australians aren't forced to do that because our governments don't want to deal with that. Aboriginal issues don't win votes. At the end of the day, we have a country that is apathetic to any of the trauma Aboriginal communities face or the racism. I mean, just in the last few days, looking at Twitter, you just do a search of what Australians think about, you know, what's going on with the Aboriginal Lives Matter marches, which are going to happen this weekend, and you'll get a real sort of indication of how people really feel, which is that we don't have any issues in our own country. And then you have our own prime minister saying, you know, don't import this Black Lives Matter movement to Australia. It's
like, which is so ridiculous.
Which is outrageous.
How would you explain the government's blind spot about the lasting impact of the white colonization just on that Scott Morrison thing?
Well, the fact is Australia has had a Black Lives movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the past, I would say since the 1930s, there were, you know, and there's even written accounts of protests in the 1800s after Aboriginal massacres.
Jeez.
So it's not a new thing. The government understands that Australia is getting to boiling point around Aboriginal issues. It's not in their best interest to try and quell that tension so that we're labelled as radicals. You know, which then immediately discredits you, and then no one's really going to hear your voice. I think Scott is just following a long line of prime ministers who want to brush all of this under the carpet because it is too hard.
It's just the easier thing to do. Yeah,
it is the easier thing to do, and you know, the fact of the matter is, racism is rife in Australia.
It is.
You know, politicians do not want to upset the apple cart, so to speak.
No.
It is not in their best interest to sit down, have a honest and discussion about that racism, because they fear it will alienate voters, essentially. There have been moments throughout our history where people have gotten their hopes up. Aboriginal people have thought, okay, something is going to be done. I mean, the Kevin Rudd saying sorry in regards to the generation. But sadly, it has just become symbolic because afterwards.
Yeah, because sorry is not enough. Like, you need to sort of like
action.
Make some action. Like, you can't just be like, oh, sorry for that. And it's just like, well, what are you going to do now to correct these things? Like,
Well, I mean, you know, we have goodwill in spades in that sense. Mm. But where, you know, put your money where your mouth is. We need, and it's not like you don't have the solutions, because Aboriginal people have been working hard in the government and outside of the government for years, you know, giving the solutions to authorities, to saying, you know, if you want to reduce this racism, this is what you can do. If you want to reduce deaths in custody, this is what you can do. We've had inquiry after inquiry. We've had royal commissions, and yet no one seems to want to invest in those solutions. So, you know, you can understand the anger of the protesters, but Scott Morrison is just completely tone deaf when it comes to this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I was just going to say, we've already seen like thousands of protesters marching in most of the Australian capital cities this week, with a lot more planned for this weekend, like we were just talking about. But Scott Morrison has urged people not to attend. New South Wales are trying to make it illegal. And in Victoria, police have said, although individuals won't be fined, the event's organisers will. What would you say people that are weighing up the issue of protesting against risks relating to coronavirus right now?
Look, all I can say is, I've got a lot of friends who will be marching. If I was in Sydney, I would definitely be out. I mean, you know, if you can march, do it. But it is an individual choice, so you mitigate those risks. There are Aboriginal health services in Melbourne, Sydney, and I'm not sure in what other cities, but who are providing face masks and hand sanitizers.
Yeah, that's great.
Everyone is asking that protesters social distance. So people are taking the precautions that the government has told them to take.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yet by trying to shut it down, it just goes to, I guess, the very heart of Australia, which is we don't want to give a voice to these ugly things that are happening beneath our noses. Scott Morrison, I mean, just, you know, in May when the protesters all took to the streets blaming 5G networks and calling COVID-19 a hoax, you know, people need to be reminded that at the time, Scott Morrison said it's a free country, people are dealing with
it's like frustrated, how he wants to react.
He literally said people can make their protests and make their voices heard at the time. But the very clear difference, you know, in this case is that one is for black rights, the other is a bunch of white nutcases. I don't know,
it's like the people in the US protesting about haircuts and like that. Oh god, it's
absolutely so stupid. If Germany, after World War II, had not done sort of this, you know, this work in ensuring that Germans had to understand the impacts of the Nazis and Hitler, you would not have a country so much more about equality now. In Australia, you know, we don't have that. When, you know, we grow up, when I was in school, and I'm sure it's changing now in schools. But when I was in school, I mean, we were just sort of told Captain Cook came and then Arthur Phillip came.
Well, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I was going to ask, so is it taught all throughout? Because I didn't grow up in Australia, so I only did like the last year or like 2 years in high school here. But do they teach you this at school? Because I don't remember learning anything in those 2 years.
Not in my school specifically, it was an elected subject.
Right.
So you had to elect to learn about Australian history. And even then, it was very whitewashed.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you didn't really learn about Aboriginal history. It was learning about Captain Cook and like all of that sort of stuff.
Okay.
So for me personally, it wasn't, we didn't have access to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the idea that, we would do Australian history in school and, I mean, Aboriginal people were essentially a footnote in that. And I think when I was at school, the Aboriginal studies was not could not contribute to your university TER score at the time.
Oh, wow. What?
And so if you wanted to make up those units, you couldn't do that. You would have to go do biology or something.
So it had to be like a really extra thing. Wow, that's awful.
And I think times are changing. I mean, I'm working in my hometown of Bourke in Western New South Wales. We started a program called Spirit where we connect elders with young Aboriginal people and get them to record, you know, the elders' stories of their histories. It's an oral
story. Sounds great.
Bourke High School do have a strong emphasis, because the community, Aboriginal community there is so large, on ensuring that everybody understands Australian history in its truest context. And I think kids these days learn about the stolen generation, all of those things. But I think when it comes to racism and the indiscriminate deaths of black people, that's something we are not teaching our children. The idea that we should just get over it is also a concept that keeps coming up, because, as I said, Australia is very good at propaganda. is very good at selling itself to the world as this sort of young and free country, and everyone's laid back, and it's great.
No worries.
We don't have any issues. Yeah. We have wealth. We have beautiful beaches. We have all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and so we're so invested in the lie that, you know, to actually then unpick that would just be, I think, for too much for the government and for most people. So, I mean, when Kevin Rudd said sorry, there was a lot of really goodwill from the non-Indigenous community, but there was also a lot of criticism. I just, the sheer amount of comments I was getting saying, why should I have to apologize? Why should I have, you know, I wasn't there. I didn't do this. It was just, you know, just show.
Yeah, I hate that. Yeah. I didn't do it. And it's just like, oh, mate, like, come on.
It's like,
no one's saying you did do it. People are saying it is important to acknowledge that this happened. You know?
That's it. Well, before we finish up, Alan, I just want to ask, like, as a queer Indigenous man, what can you tell us about what young Aboriginal people experience when sort of grappling with their sexuality?
Oh, look, I've written about this a few times. I mean, and everyone obviously has their own experiences, lived experiences. But I think for me, I didn't come out until I was sort of at university when I was away from my hometown. It was really difficult living in a hometown. And also, you know, the idea of what you have to be as an Aboriginal man, which most people think is just this big, strong fella that plays football and, you know, does all this stuff. And I was not that. And so I struggled immensely. But for queer Aboriginal people, the fact is there is, you know, we are living a doubly marginalized life. You know, first of all, we experience racism from the wider community. So we have that. And then we have the homophobia as well from the wider community and struggling with our sexuality. Young Aboriginal people who are questioning their sexuality are more likely to self-harm or kill themselves. There's not much research around that, but the people who've worked in those communities, you know, can see it clearly. Often there's a confusion about whether they are doing this because they also live in poverty and they also have many other issues because of their Aboriginality. Mm-hmm. But there's a confluence of two things there, and there are a lot of issues. I think the other thing is for young queer Aboriginal people, when they do take that step to come out or be part of the queer community, often there's not many spaces for them to feel comfortable in. I mean, and I just call it the mainstream gay community now, or the scene, as some people say, is incredibly racist, is incredibly toxic. And is full of often white men who really feel like because they are gay and that they may have been victimized at some point in their life, that, you know, anyone else's issues don't matter. So you will rarely find Aboriginal people at those kind of, you know, within the scene. And I think when I was, you know, kind of in my 20s and going out doing things, I found it incredibly toxic. And I have a sort of dark brown skin, but my best mate, Maddie, is like really, really black. And it destroyed him because people would tell him, oh, well, you know, do you have a job? You know, and gay people thought they could do this.
So bad.
You know, or you look pretty for an Aboriginal. Or you're not disgusting. Like the other ones. And I found that, I mean, I just, you know, we just watched this happen. And it's unbelievable. Yeah. Because I think, you know, a lot of the gay community think they have the right to say that because in some way they've been victimized because of their sexuality. Mm. And I just find it astonishing the lack of empathy they have for anyone else who's experiencing.
I've definitely seen a lot of that, yeah.
Especially racism on apps like Grindr.
Oh, my God,
Things like that. I mean, actively excludes anyone who isn't white in that sense.
Yeah, I think we were speaking about earlier about how they've gotten rid of the race,
the ethnicity filter.
Yeah.
And I mean, what's interesting is, you know, I read that article and then, you know, I like curious reading the comments and people are so triggered by that. I don't know why.
People are triggered by everything. It's very annoying.
So triggered.
So, Ellen, thank you so much for taking the time and energy to speak with us today. It's been super enlightening. Really good chats. How can people follow your writing online?
Look, yeah, if people want to read my work or look at my stuff, you can just Google Alan Clark and put Aboriginal next to it. And you can also see my work on ABC's True Crime Unravel online, which is a 6-year-long investigation I did into the unsolved death of an Aboriginal teenager, Mark Haynes. And and I update people pretty regularly on Twitter. I am working on a podcast at the moment about a death in custody, actually. So it's really timely. And that's coming out in the next few months with ABC. Yeah. So, yeah, keep an eye out.
Great. Awesome. It's so good. Thank you again so much for being here tonight.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this episode. It was a very heated
discussion. It was a very special episode.
Very special.
Important.
I want to say a big, big thank you to Alan Clark for joining us this evening for a very important discussion.
It sounds like a TV show host.
Yeah.
Alan Clark.
It's
Alan
very, Clark. Like...
Featuring yeah. Alan. That
real feel.
Strong name.
But... as said earlier on in the show, if you do want to support Black Lives Matter, please look at Indigenous communities, what petitions you can sign, what money you can donate to different relief funds, for jail funds, for legal funds.
Read and listen.
Read, listen, learn. Help, respect, teach. Yeah. Absolutely. And for our patrons, please stick around.
After show, just for a change.
Yeah, we're going to be chatting about gay spaces and how we feel that
things outer space.
Outer spaces.
They're colonizing outer space.
Yes,
outer space.
Space force.
Outer space as a human race.
I want to be talking about outer space tonight.
I'm sure we can do an outer space.
I hope we do this podcast long enough to be like the first gay on the moon.
You know, stick around.
Coming to you live from Uranus.
Sorry, get out, Thomas.
But no, as always, thank you for tuning in, and we love you all.
We love you so much.
Love you so much. Thank you so much.
We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.